Untenable. Definition. Adjective. Not able to be maintained or defended against attack or objection, especially of a position or view. Synonyms. Indefensible. Insupportable. Unsustainable. Unjustified. Flimsy. Weak. Shaky. One of the mind-boggling consequences of non-duality and becoming very conscious is that all criticism becomes untenable. All criticism is delusion. And here I want to explore why that is the case. This is in fact the case, and it's one of those consequences of non-duality that most people don't understand when they just hear about non-duality being spoken of by Eckhart Tolle or somebody else like that. This is one of those additional wrinkles that you discover as you go deeper down the rabbit hole. See, criticism is one of the mind's greatest traps. The mind uses criticism as a red herring to distract from turning inwards and self-reflection. Criticism is very convenient at orienting the mind outwardly, externalizing whatever problems exist on the inside to the outside, and getting the mind to deny responsibility and looking at the world holistically. See, because to do an effective criticism, you have to trick your own self into believing that the thing you're criticizing is separate from yourself and distinct from you, and therefore you are then justified to criticize it because it's not you. But the only way you can do that is by not being conscious of the fact that everything is one. So what criticism does is actually criticism actively prevents people from noticing that everything is one. Because if you notice that everything is one and you're conscious of that 24/7, what are you going to criticize? Yourself? You would constantly be walking around criticizing yourself. And of course, that's a giant waste of time. And also, you would notice very quickly just how unsatisfying that is as an attitude towards life. It's a very ungrateful and just unhappy way to be. I mean, how happy are you criticizing people all the time or criticizing yourself all the time? That's the very definition of neurosis. So that's the trap. But to really wrap your mind around this, to really understand this at a deep level, well, that takes some work. That takes some contemplation of this topic. See, criticism requires judgment. And I've talked about judgment in the past and how problematic judgment is. I have an episode called How to Stop Judging, where I talk about this. I also have a few episodes about morality and the problems with moralization and should statements, where we also touched upon this topic. But I really specifically want to talk about criticism because, see, the mind loves to be slippery here and to not connect all the dots. So the mind might say, oh, yeah, well, criticism is one thing and judgment is another thing and moralization is a third thing and that all these are different things. Well, in fact, they're all very closely connected. But see, the problem with criticism is the same problem that you have with judgment and with moralization. It's that judgment is a rejection of reality. It assumes that people or situations have an alternative choice, that they could have come out otherwise. And in fact, they don't. They couldn't. Reality as it presently is before you in the present moment could not be otherwise. This is a key thing you got to become conscious of. And the mind doesn't want to become conscious of this because the mind is very imaginative. And so it can go inside, it can start to imagine all sorts of alternative scenarios. Like, well, that person could have been nicer, and this situation could have been better, and that thing there could have turned out more positively. Like that. But the fact is that what we have right now in the present moment is what we've got. And if you're a believer in science, then you know that science tells you that everything happens according to physical laws, and all of it has been stemming from the very origin of the Big Bang, from the very beginning of time, from 14 billion years ago. All of that has been like one concert, one symphony, one giant movement of the universe moving up to this present point right now. Every single word that I'm speaking started there. So in a sense, it's all caused from there. And here we are, and it cannot be otherwise. And for you to wish that it could be something else, well, is that something that your own mind is projecting, perhaps, upon reality? Maybe you were wishing that I would say a different word here or there, or do something this way or that way, or maybe not me, but somebody else. But these are games that your mind is playing with you because you're caught and lost in your imagination. As you become more conscious, you become more aware that, hey, yeah, this is all just the doing of my imagination. And it's a really unsatisfying way to live. But see, the mind hates to accept this because this requires extreme maturity and consciousness, because then you have to accept all the evil of the world. And that's, of course, something your mind hates to accept because your mind's entire job is to help you to manipulate the world to get all of your personal needs met, all your survival and thrival needs. And the best way to do that is to get you to point your finger at all this other evil stuff out there, and the thing that you call evil is really just that which gets in the way of your agenda. Take a look. That's really what you mean by evil when you say the word evil. Of course, most people don't know that. So, of course, criticism is a really tricky habit to break. And in fact, it's more than just a habit, it's an addiction. Especially in Western culture, as a society, we have developed this addiction to criticism. You see it all over the news, you see it in politics, you see it on YouTube, you see it wherever you look. Everyone's criticizing everybody else. Everyone's pointing fingers, because it's so easy to point fingers. It's much harder to turn inward, self-reflect, and take ownership of all the stuff you don't like about life, and to stop complaining and moaning. But see, most people, they don't want that. They don't want to take responsibility. They don't want to turn inwards and self-reflect. They are working hard at a dead-end 9-to-5 job, which is mind-numbing and grueling. So when they get home after 8 hours of work, another 2 hours of commute, you know, that's 10 hours of the day, they get home, they're dead tired, they want to just crash on the couch, turn on the TV, look at some news, look at the latest politics, and criticize away along with all the commentators there who have made careers, multi-million-dollar careers out of criticizing. That's basically what they get paid for, is just constant criticism. And then so this person who's sitting on the couch tunes in with that, resonates with that, and then gets a little bit of glee, a little bit of pleasure, guilty sort of low-consciousness pleasure from criticizing whoever is the easiest person to criticize at that time in the news. That's how this little game works. It's a real addiction. Just like junk food is an addiction, internet is an addiction, whatever else is an addiction, so is this. Except this is one of those subtle addictions which is much harder to break, because when you're in a group of people who are always constantly criticizing, then you get caught up in that mentality. And you don't know any other way to live or any other way to interact with the world. But you're missing out on a lot. So here's some examples of where criticism is untenable, or how it is untenable, rather. And of course, here you might immediately object and you might say, but Leo, who are you to say that criticism is untenable? Because after all, you're criticizing people all the time throughout your episodes. I've heard you criticize Trump. I've heard you criticize certain teachers, certain non-dual traditions, certain people, the way they understand things, certain pickup artists, certain this, certain that. You're criticizing people all the time. So aren't you being a hypocrite? Well, of course, as I become more conscious, I become more and more conscious of the limiting ways in which I habitually emote, speak, act, and think. And so one thing you should be seeing within me, if I'm actually truly growing, is a change in attitude about a great many things. And this is one of those things. So yes, it's true, for example, that I like to criticize Trump. I have in the past, and I still, in a sense, continue to do so today. But the important thing is that you have to understand that criticism can come from two different places. The first place is the conventional place. This is the place of just criticizing unconsciously. Just criticizing because you honestly believe that some person is a fool or is evil or something like that. And the second place is the more conscious way to criticize, which is you criticize, but at the same time, you understand that your own very criticism defeats itself, that your own very criticism is untenable, which is what I'm advocating for in this episode. So, for example, with Trump, he's very easy to criticize. Everybody loves to criticize him. How could you not? He does look like a fool. He says foolish things. He lies almost constantly. He has ridiculous positions. He's very unconscious. And I'm not saying that as a criticism of him. I'm saying that as just a fact. That's just how he is, regardless of whether you like it or hate it. But it's so easy to criticize all that, forgetting that Trump is the way he is because he can't be otherwise, literally. He can't. That's who he is. That's who he must be given his genetics, his education, his upbringing, his life experience, all the people he surrounds himself with, and all of that. That's what that creates. He is a product of our very culture, of our materialistic stage orange culture. So that's what you get when you take American culture and you sort of take it to its pinnacle and you exaggerate it to the extreme. You get something like Trump. But of course, most people don't like to really think about the depth of that. They just like to criticize Trump for being Trump. And of course, I do too. And it's kind of a guilty pleasure. But also, I understand at a deeper level why he has to be the way he is. And I can't really blame him for being the way he is because he's just a product of our culture, a product of our time. And of course, you might say, oh, but Leo, but I mean, doesn't he have a choice? It sounds like you're being very defeatist and fatalistic here, saying that, oh, he can't be otherwise. I mean, after all, tomorrow, can't he decide to like stop tweeting or to not tweet the sort of racist thing he was going to tweet? And in one sense, he can, but in another sense, he can't. You see? Because for him to stop doing that kind of low conscious stuff that he does, he would have to actually experience a shift in consciousness. He'd have to become more aware. He'd have to become much more self-reflective. And the whole tragedy of it is that when you have a deeply unconscious person, he's incapable of self-reflection. It's painful. The ego doesn't want to admit its own faults and mistakes and look inwardsly, and it doesn't want to be honest with itself and honest with other people. It doesn't want that. It wants to defend itself and to push through its agenda, which is what you see within Trump. And of course, as you become more aware of your own ego doing that within you, you start to then empathize with that same mechanism working within someone like Trump. So on the one hand, I can criticize him. On the other hand, I can also see why he must be the way he is. And I can also see tendencies within him, for example, that exist within me, that exist within humanity at large. But most people, when they criticize him, they don't really see that. They don't see those lessons. They're just criticizing him out of a sort of guilty pleasure by externalizing all their problems. And that just becomes more of the same stuff. So all your criticisms of Trump are ultimately untenable, whatever they are. Even if you think Trump will lead us into a nuclear apocalypse, which maybe he will. And that's a very legitimate criticism, is that he's actually perhaps one of the greatest dangers to America itself is him. But also you have to understand that that's still an untenable criticism. Because, yeah, of course, every single system, which is a complicated system, its greatest threat is itself from the inside, not from the outside. It's not terrorists who are the greatest threat to America. It's America that's the greatest threat to America. It's American culture that will ultimately be the undoing of America if America gets undone. But of course, who wants to really think about those deep truths. People don't like that. People like to think about simplistic truths. And they like to think that, oh, well, Trump could be different if he just wised up a little bit, if he listened to his advisors a little bit more, and if he did this and he did that, and then everything would go nicely. Yeah, if. And if my aunt had a dick, she would be my uncle. But she doesn't. This is true not just of Trump. This is true of everything that you might criticize. All the low consciousness stuff within society, all the stuff that pisses you off, all the evil stuff, you name it. Corporate greed, people getting addicted to things, people scamming each other, people doing violence to each other, all these mass shootings that we have, terrorism, all this sort of stuff. You like to criticize this stuff. We do as a culture. But while we're criticizing, we're not really thinking about how we ourselves are part of the very same problem that is contributing to this cycle. See, for example, like corporate greed. You might like to rail against corporate greed, and sometimes I get in that kind of mood. You like to rail against corporations, like maybe pharmaceutical companies. Many of these pharmaceutical companies, they're earning billions and billions of dollars, feeding the medical industry with false information, false studies that they're skewing and paying for so that their drugs can be justified to have a legitimate use. And then those are sold by doctors, and hundreds of people, thousands of people get killed every year from this, get injured, get diseases, don't get cures that they otherwise could have gotten cures for. You know, children have problems and all this because of this stuff. And you might say, well, this is a very evil system, and let me go out there and criticize these evil corporations for being so greedy and doing all this. Yes, but that's such a superficial level of understanding of what's really going on. And it's separating you from this entire cycle. See, what people don't understand, though, is that they're part of this whole cycle because you're part of this whole industry. You contribute to it. You might think, oh, well, I'm just one of the ordinary citizens who are getting screwed over by these greedy corporations. But is that really true? Have you ever worked for one of these big greedy corporations? Many of you probably have. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to work for the pharmaceutical company itself and be its CEO or its marketing guy. You could be the person who's just a secretary or the guy who washes the floors, the janitor, and you're still contributing to that entire cycle. And even if you say, oh, well, I don't do that. I work for some other company. I work for some web development company. Oh, yeah, but your web development company exists to serve clients. And some of those clients are some of these big greedy corporations like pharmaceutical companies. You see? So your very paycheck comes from this entire cycle. And you might say, well, Leo, I don't even do that. I'm completely unrelated to any of that. Well, do you have a 401k? Do you invest in the stock market, maybe the S&P 500? What is that? Where is your money going? Your money is going to fund these greedy corporations. And actually, these greedy corporations are precisely so greedy because they're working so hard to try to give you a return on investment on your 401k money. That's ultimately what they're doing. So they're screwing all these good citizens over to get you a little bit extra 5 cents dividend per share on your stock. See, so we're all part of this system. We're in this together. And of course, the whole key to non-duality, to becoming more conscious, that you start to see more and more how you're not isolated from anything. You develop this holistic understanding. And you realize that every piece of reality is interconnected with everything else. So to criticize one thing, of course it's hypocrisy. What do you think is going on here when you're criticizing? I mean, reality is one thing. Whatever you take your finger and point it with to, you're pointing at that thing with the thing, which is reality. So you're using reality to point at reality. It's all one self-involved circle jerk. That's what reality is. It's a strange loop. So for this very reason, all criticism becomes ultimately untenable. Terrorism is another thing that people love to criticize. But terrorism, this is such a hypocrisy to criticize, because the West loves to criticize terrorism as if terrorism is some faraway third world radical Islamic problem. And people like Sam Harris, for example, love to criticize Islam for those reasons. But this is a deep, it's a shallow understanding of the problem. It's an understanding of the problem which takes you out of the equation, very conveniently, of course. But see, the true causes of terrorism are not some radical Islamic guy who sits in a cave somewhere far, far away. It's actually the very policies and culture of developed first world countries. As these countries rise in power and in status, they then use their power and their status to manipulate the entire world, to manipulate geopolitics, to stage all sorts of fake wars, to do what? To make the business environment, the global business environment, favorable to the giant corporations who are in charge of the country. And so as this is happening all around the world, there's a deep inequality that develops between the third world countries and the first world countries. And this gap gets wider and wider and wider because the first world countries use all the third world countries basically as wage slaves to work for them and to do all their dirty business. And then we go and we try to manipulate them to get the best of their resources. We destabilize governments all around the world. The U.S. has been doing that for the last 60 years in South America, in Africa, in Middle East, almost anywhere that they can. Of course, it makes sense because the U.S. is trying to make the environment as favorable for itself as possible. That's what egos do, both individually and collectively. So, of course, the U.S. is doing that. And of course, what do you get when you do enough of that? When you do a lot of that, eventually you piss people off. You develop enemies because of the deep inequality that's being created. And then, of course, you get stuff like terrorism. Now, is that the only factor for terrorism? No, there's many complicated factors, but it's certainly one of the most significant factors, and it's one of the factors that actually implicates ourselves. And of course, we don't want to hear that. What we want to do instead is we want to point our fingers and we just say, oh, well, it's just those backwards Islamic radicals and all their backwards cultures and all their silly beliefs. It's just that if they just became more scientifically minded, all this would be solved. So in other words, they need to become exactly like us so that we can get along with them. Because the way that they are now doesn't fit our agenda for our stage orange desire to go out there and to make them, the world a suitable host for our McDonald's and KFCs and all the chains and all the big businesses and big oil and big pharma and all this other stuff. But see, nobody talks about this. Because that's too much responsibility. That's too painful. That would actually require that we have to self-reflect as a country. We'd have to re-evaluate our culture and our materialistic paradigm. We have to think about all this stuff. We'd have to actually show some compassion for other cultures, for other ways of life. We'd have to actually show some compassion for the backwardsness of some cultures and have to actually think about that and not just want to get in there and exploit those backwards cultures, which are perhaps not as scientifically developed as us yet, but maybe will be in a couple hundred years, but they're not there yet, but we're going to exploit them to earn some money. So we'd have to really evaluate all that as a country, as a culture. And of course, who really wants to do that? That's painful, that's boring, that's long. You don't see anybody on TV, none of the political pundits or news anchors talking about this sort of stuff. No, it's just like they hate us for our freedom, and so we need to fight them, or otherwise you're going to kill us. It's just, you know, overly simplified like that. So, criticizing terrorism, well, who are you really criticizing? Are you seeing the interconnectedness of all these issues and how they all directly relate to yourself? And if you're criticizing politics and the government, like a lot of people like to do, well, what's your role in that? What's your responsibility? Do you realize that the government is just made up of citizens and that those citizens are you, people like you? And the reason the government functions so poorly is because people like you are lazy and they just sit on their couch and they just do nothing and they just whine and complain and criticize all the time, but they don't get involved. They don't actually try to go out there and bother to learn what the problems are and what the possible solutions are. Do you see that? You're contributing to the very thing that you're criticizing. In fact, your criticism is contributing to the problem, because the more you criticize, the more other people around you start to criticize, the more everybody gets into this criticism circle jerk, and then nothing productive gets done. Because criticism is not designed to be productive. It's designed to be anti-productive. That's its point. The point of criticism is to maintain yourself, the ego, to maintain homeostasis, both as an individual, but also collectively as a society. While we're criticizing everybody else, guess what we're not doing? We're not looking deeply inwards and fixing our own true problems. And so nothing really gets fixed. How about science? I like to criticize science, and sometimes I get criticism for being critical of science, and people say, oh, Leo, why do you got to criticize science so much? I mean, isn't science good, and aren't you going overboard with your criticism of science? But you see, when I criticize science, I understand the deeper structures of science. I've studied the philosophy of science for a very long time, and actually when I criticize science, I do it from a position of love. It's because I love science, and I want science to be pure and non-dogmatic. And the thing I criticize science for is all its dogmas, and all its paradigms, and all the ways in which it's being myopic. Because I understand that science, modern science, goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks and Romans, 2,000 years, perhaps even longer, where the materialist paradigm first came about. The Greek atomists, Democritus, he posited the idea that the world is made of atoms, and from there we sort of just ran with it. And that still continues to this day, and I understand how tricky my own mind is, and therefore how tricky everybody else's mind is, and how tricky the minds of the scientists are. And I know from my own experience how dogmatic they are because of how dogmatic I get to be and all the traps that I fall into and I've fallen into for many years in my own life that I've had to work through. See, so I can empathize with that. And I know the history of science and all the paradigm shifts that science has struggled through for the last 2,000 years and all the bickering back and forth and all the pseudoscience that went on and all the struggles with that. And I know that modern science can't be other than what it is. You see, it has to be the way that it is. And it'll continue to evolve and people will continue to be bureaucratic and they'll continue to be dogmatic and closed-minded because that's just the nature of science. Because the nature of science is that it tries to be rigorous. That's part of its pro and part of its con. Sort of like an antivirus system. You know, a very strong antivirus system on your computer is great until you want to install some software and then it flags your good software as a virus. And then it screws up your whole system because of these, like, false positives. Well, science has the exact same problem. It's precisely because science tries to be so rigorous and so objective that it excludes things like spirituality, non-duality, and paranormal stuff, and psychedelic stuff, and a bunch of other stuff. That's the point of science. The mistake is to then think that, oh, science has the truth. No, science doesn't have the truth. Science is this very little walled-in garden, which has very, very strict rules and boundaries for what can get inside of it. So a lot of good stuff doesn't get inside of it, not for hundreds of years, until those rules change. And those rules will only change with a lot of back and forth bickering and debating and ultimately people dying. Those people who didn't believe in those rules will have to ultimately prevail over those who did, and those who did have to ultimately die. And new generations of scientists have to be born. That's how science works. It's a cultural bureaucratic process. So anyways, my point is that I understand that. I'm not just criticizing science just to criticize science. I understand that. It's a very deep thing. And on the one hand, I criticize science, but on the other hand, I also understand that all my criticism of science is untenable because science can't help being how it is. So what am I really criticizing? And how about non-duality? Talk about the mother of all useless debates. How much debate and criticism have we had within religious traditions, mystical traditions, and non-dual schools and teachers and teachings and students for the last 2,000 years? Sometimes I think that if we took every single person who argues and criticizes and debates about non-duality, and we put them into giant hamster wheels, so that rather than spending all that energy criticizing, they would just run in this hamster wheel, and we plug that into the national power grid, we would be able to fuel the entire world just from the energy which is exerted on debating non-duality. And the deep irony there is that supposedly, if you're truly becoming more and more non-dual and more conscious, which is what non-duality is about, then you should be becoming more and more conscious that all your criticisms of non-dual teachings and teachers and schools is all a giant waste of time, and that it's a red herring from being conscious. And of course, that's precisely why people who pursue non-duality criticize so much, precisely because it is an obstacle and a distraction away from doing the actual work. That's not a bug, that's a feature. That's a feature of most mainstream spirituality, is that it distracts you from actual spirituality. See, the devil is very clever. He's going to use the very thing that's supposed to set you free to enslave you. And that's exactly how most people approach spirituality. But of course, to be really non-dual is to understand that non-duality and duality are both the same and not different at all, and that you really have no valid criticisms of anyone. Even if people are believing in stupid things, even if they're believing in untrue things, you realize it can't be otherwise. They have to believe in those things given the state of our culture, the state of our society, the development of people at large, and all the misinformation that's out there, and the trickery of the mind. Most people, even if you give them all the right information, they're still going to manage to trick themselves just because that's the nature of the mind. And a truly non-dual person understands that, doesn't get upset by that, but accepts that, accepts reality as it is, now as he imagines it should be in some idyllic fantasy scenario. So, of course, I could go on and on with these examples, but I think you get the point. And of course, a lot of objections come up at this point. People could just say things like, but Leo, you know, it sounds like what you're arguing here for is just a relativism, and like we should just tolerate Nazis now according to your philosophy, that all criticism is untenable. Because if it's all untenable, then there's no reason to criticize the Nazis or murderers or anybody else. And of course, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you're still free to act however you want to act. What I'm just questioning is your self-righteous self-justifications. So if the Nazis roll their tanks into town and you don't agree with the Nazis, you can still have standards. You can still disagree with them. You can still have preferences for what kind of lifestyle you want, what kind of society you want to live in. You can go fight those Nazis. I'm not saying you can't do any of that. I'm saying that your criticisms of it, your self-righteous criticisms, that's just untenable. But Leo, does that mean that everything is predestined now? Because it sounds like you're saying that people don't have a choice in the matter and things will just turn out the way they're going to turn out. No, what I'm saying is that the present moment is exactly how it is and it can't be changed. What will happen in the future? Well, of course, that's changeable. We don't know what that's going to be. So in that sense, everything is not predestined. And it does matter what you think and what you do. That's precisely what's going to determine the future. And it's possible to change the future without criticism. See? Which leads to the next objection where people ask, well, Leo, but isn't criticism leading to improvement? Aren't I actually doing something good by sitting on my couch and criticizing those terrorists or those Nazis or those politicians or whatever? And what I would say as a counterpoint to that is that actually what leads to improvement is not criticism, but self-reflection. And that here is a very counterintuitive move that you have to make, which is that you have to avoid the trap of thinking that your criticism is actually beneficial to the world. In some cases, it might seem like it is, but in most cases, actually, it probably has the exact opposite effect of what you think. A good example of this is Sam Harris. Sam Harris loves to criticize Islam for some of its radical and superstitious elements, and he loves to criticize religion in general, distinguishing it from science and from rationality. But of course, as we understand, all these distinctions will eventually collapse. They're all untenable. And what you see practically with him is that he argues a lot back and forth with people, but his criticism ultimately has come to this point where it's supposed to be coming from a place of like, yeah, I want to criticize religion so that it improves itself. But is it really improving itself? Or is it actually having the exact opposite effect? I mean, Sam Harris gets so many death threats, he can't even tell people which city he lives in anymore because he's afraid for his own life and for his own family. And I can sympathize with that. I can understand that. But when it gets to that point, you have to also wonder like, well, maybe there's a better way to interact with the people or the ideologies that you disagree with than this kind of sharp biting criticism, because, is it having the kind of effect that you want it to have? What I would suggest is that if we really want to improve the world, it's not going to come from more people sitting on their ass criticizing other people. It's going to come from people taking radical ownership of their own lives and really self-reflecting, and then helping other people to self-reflect. And then ultimately that will lead to more improvement than you will get by criticizing people here and there. Now, of course, you will object and say here, well, Leo, aren't you now criticizing Sam Harris? So you just said yourself that all criticism is untenable, and now here you are criticizing Sam Harris. So you yourself are guilty of the very thing, the very hypocrisy that you're speaking out against. Yes, of course. That's the larger point. That's the thing that the finger is pointing to. The finger is pointing to the moon. What I'm trying to point you towards is that there's a possibility to sort of rise above the fray, to not get caught up in the mudslinging contest that we see where people criticize each other, and then another set of people criticize those people who criticize the other people, and then there's another layer of people who criticize those people for criticizing those people for criticizing some other people. And so everybody's criticizing everybody else. You see? This doesn't work out too well. So when you become conscious of that, your mind says, oh, how do I exit the entire thing? Is that possible? Can I just get out of this entire game? I don't want to be involved in this mudslinging contest at all. And what would that look like? That would look like recognizing that all criticism is untenable and just dropping it. It even means that you have to recognize that your own criticism of all the criticism is also itself untenable. Of course. And if you think that leads to a paradox and a contradiction, of course it does. Of course. Because reality is non-dual, and it's a strange loop, and therefore it must be contradictory at the very rock bottom. So you might say, well, Leo, so that means then that you're saying it is okay to criticize other people. Because at first it sounded like you were saying it's not okay to criticize other people. That's low consciousness. And now you're saying that that itself, that criticism is also untenable. Therefore, now you're saying it is okay to criticize other people. So which is it? Am I allowed to criticize people? Of course you are. You can criticize people. Of course. That's the paradox of it. That's the freedom of reality. That's what you're noticing here. Reality is infinitely free. It gives you all these degrees of freedom to do whatever you want. And the question is, what are you going to do with it? Yes, I have to contradict myself, because the paradox of criticism is that all criticism is untenable, and also all criticism is tenable. So I'm not here saying that now you need to go out there and become a critic of the critics. That's just more criticism. It's the same problem as trying to stop violence by being more violent. You're not going to stop violence by out-violencing everybody else who's violent. That doesn't work. And the same thing with criticism. When you actually understand this paradox, that all criticism is both untenable but also tenable, what tends to happen is a profound silencing of the mind. It's like this Zen moment that you have. You understand the game and what it's about. And when you see the game from a sort of meta perspective, then you stand above it. And that makes a lot of difference. So while it might sound like I'm just being a postmodernist here and saying, well, it's criticism is bad on the one hand, but it's good on the other hand. It's untenable on the one hand, it's tenable on the other hand. It seems like I'm just mentally masturbating back and forth and that none of this has any practical use. Actually, it does have a very big practical use. Because there's a big difference between people who understand what I'm talking about here and those who don't. Let's call the first person, person A, who doesn't understand, and the second person, person B, who does understand. Person A is what I would call righteously critical. He's critical, and he actually believes in his criticism. And he's actually disturbed by the thing which he is railing against. So if he's railing against Trump, he's actually disturbed by Trump. If he's railing against terrorism, he's actually disturbed by terrorism. Person A. Person B is more conscious than that. He sees the game. He's at the meta level. He's above it a little bit. So can he still be critical? Yes. But when he's critical, he's pragmatically critical, which means he uses criticism as a strategic tool when necessary, in moderation. He doesn't use it as an escape for his ego. And very importantly, he's not disturbed by the thing he's criticizing. So he might criticize Trump, but also he sees the devil's advocate opposite perspective of why Trump must be Trump and can't be any other way. And he's not too disturbed by Trump. And he sees terrorists, and he might be critical of terrorists as well because he doesn't like violence, for example. But he also understands that those terrorists don't really have an option, given their background, where they grew up, the culture they were in, the poverty they were in, the kind of conditions they were in, and the kind of injustices that were done to them. Of course, they must turn out to be exactly the way that they are. He understands that at a deep level. So he's not disturbed by it the way that person A is. So now there's a list of differences between person A and person B. Person A, and this, the reason I'm outlining it like this is because people often will rebut me and try to say, oh, well, Leo, all this stuff is just kind of wishy-washy mental masturbation with no practical real-world consequences. No, this has huge real-world consequences. And here I'm trying to draw those out for you. So person A, practically, will be much more critical overall, just in terms of volume. If you measure the volume of person A criticism versus person B's criticism, person A's will be 100 times larger, which makes a big deal. Person A also takes his criticism very seriously, much more so than person B. Because of this, he suffers more, he's more angry, and he's never at peace. He lashes out more. He's much more likely to do evil. Person A is. Because when you really believe in your criticism, then you have much more justification to yell, name call, view other people as being subhuman. You're much more likely to threaten violence, to actually commit violence, to commit murder, to do all this sorts of nasty stuff that we generally don't like. Much more likely to do that stuff than person B. Because person B is above it, he doesn't take it so seriously. Person A also lacks compassion and the deeper understanding that I've been talking about. Person A doesn't see the non-duality. Person A doesn't see how everything interconnects in reality. He doesn't see the sort of the holistic big picture. And of course, he doesn't have compassion because he's put up a barrier between himself and the thing he's criticizing, so he can't really have compassion for that other person, because he can't step into that other person's shoes. A person who's truly critical of terrorists or of Donald Trump or anybody else, he literally cannot put himself into that person's shoes and experiencing actually himself being Donald Trump or being a terrorist. Because there's this division that was created. Of course, this division is completely phony. In fact, if you took that person who hates terrorists and you put him in the exact same situations as a terrorist was in from birth, he himself would become a terrorist. And if you took that person who's very critical of Trump and you put him into the exact same situation and shoes that Trump was in his entire life, he would be precisely Trump. Person A is also unproductive. He wastes a lot of time complaining with all his criticism rather than self-reflecting. Person A also can't appreciate the full, rich diversity of reality, because the whole point of criticism is to deny diversity. See, reality is so infinitely diverse that it actually threatens your very sense of survival and existence, because infinite diversity comes at the cost of things having to constantly be coming in and out of existence, constantly. But the ego hates that, so the ego wants to lock reality down, confine it to a little fixed position or a little box. And that's why the ego is so critical, is because it doesn't want change. But reality is always changing, it's always flowing, it's always flexible. Person A took a position against that, whereas person B is actually aligning himself with that aspect of reality. He's flowing with it. He's appreciating the full diversity of everything, even when that diversity threatens himself. When it threatens his ego, he says, well, screw my ego then. I much more prefer to be conscious of the full diversity, even if it threatens my very life. Whereas person A does the exact opposite of that. And ultimately, person A ends up being ungrateful and disconnected from the beauty of life, disappointed by life, whereas person B is able to see the beauty in everything. He's connected to everything. Even all the evil stuff that he doesn't like, he still sees the beauty in it. So for him, it's a win-win, whereas for person A, reality is a lose-lose because there's always something new to criticize. The ego never gets to a point where it's completely satisfied with everything. Now, you might still say, but Leo, so am I now never allowed to criticize? Is that what you're advocating? Sounds like it. And the answer is no. The problem is not so much in the criticism, it's in how conscious are you when you're actually criticizing? And are you seeing the bigger point here? Which is that when you're criticizing, how good do you actually feel? Is that actually how you want to live your life? That's the bigger point. The bigger point is that you can rise above this mudslinging contest. You know, there's the old funny adage that says that when you get dirty with a pig down in the mud, watch out, because both of you will get dirty and the pig is going to enjoy it. So for you, it's a lose-lose when you wrestle with a pig in the mud. So you have to realize that getting involved with a pig wrestling contest, that is a situation you want to steer clear from. You want to stay away as far from that as you can, rather than getting involved in that. And it's very hard because, of course, the pig will throw mud at you. And when the pig gets you with a little bit of mud, you're going to want to throw some mud back at him. But you have to question yourself, do I actually feel good throwing mud? Is that how I want to actually live? Do I want to become a pig myself? Do I want to go that low? Or do I want to rise above that? And that's a counterintuitive move, to rise above that when you got some mud in your face from somebody flinging it at you. But Leo, isn't some criticism legitimate? You see, the ego pulls this very sneaky move. It likes to create this artificial distinction between legitimate and illegitimate criticism. It likes to say, sure, Leo, yeah, some criticism is illegitimate. You're right, but some criticism is just too important. Some is really legitimate. Like, it's really important to talk about Islam, and it's really important to talk about the postmodernists. Like, Jordan Peterson likes to rant against the postmodernists, as though they're going to bring the whole world to its knees. And you know what? Maybe they will. I don't know. But nevertheless, it's criticism. And you got to wonder, is building a career around being a critic of the world or some group the best way to live your life? Is that really how you want to do it? And there are many people in the world who have built multi-million dollar careers from constant criticism. That's all they do. It's just constant criticism. These are the news anchors, the TV political pundits, the conservative radio show hosts, and folks like that. And certain academics do this, and certain intellectuals and authors and writers and speakers do this. And it's kind of sad. Because on the one hand, I can see how, yeah, they're contributing to reality and they have to do that. And in a sense, I can't fault them for it. Someone has to play that role. If Jordan Peterson's not going to play it, someone's going to play it. That's the diversity of reality. So I can't really fault him for it. On the other hand, there's a higher level. And the surest way to keep yourself from reaching the higher level is by letting your ego play this little trick on you. Oh, but our criticism is very important and it's very legitimate. If we don't criticize, the whole world is going to collapse. That's that little trick. The mind is very tricky. See, this whole notion of legitimate versus illegitimate, this is just a tool of the ego. The ego creates these labels, which it then attaches to things, which then make it feel like, oh, it's really got a strong, good position that it can't let go of. What I would suggest to you is just let it go anyways. Even if you think the whole world's going to collapse, just let it go. If the functioning of the whole world hinges on you being a virulent critic, then the whole world's not worth very much. You got to think. You got to think that there's something deeper driving the world than your criticism. That's not what's going to make humanity pull through, is your criticism. That's not going to do it. In fact, if anything, that's going to contribute to the very thing you're trying to prevent. Because that's precisely how low consciousness tends to work. It tends to backfire. The very thing you're trying to prevent is the thing you're actually going to cause. It turns into a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sort of very ironic and poetically delicious way. But Leo, aren't you yourself a critic here? Aren't you highly critical of people, or at least you have been in all your prior episodes? So what hypocrisy from you hearing you deliver this message? I recognize that I've been highly critical of certain people and ideas and traditions and schools and things in the past, and I probably will be to some extent in the future, but also what you should see in me if I'm truly growing is you should see my attitudes and my positions about things change. And one of the things I've been recently made aware of through just states of higher consciousness, mystical experience, and so forth, is that that way of speaking and thinking and acting is just not going to cut it to get to where I ultimately want to go. See, what I realize is that there's a glass ceiling. If I want to maintain my prior attitudes, if I want to be a critic the way I've tended to be, then there's only so high I can go in my consciousness. And so I have to choose. Do I want to go to the ultimate levels of consciousness? Then I have to give up all this criticizing. Or I could keep the criticizing, but then I'm going to cap myself as far as I can go. And for me, I would rather go to the very top than to maintain my critical attitudes. So what you're going to see over the next couple of years is you're going to see a sort of softening in my stance. You're going to see me sort of rising above the mudslinging contest and not participating in it. Because actually what I've realized is that I'm not happy or fulfilled when I'm involved with this mudslinging contest. I would much rather spend that time just being conscious of being. Here's a nice little metaphor I have for you. Imagine a pack of hyenas like you've seen on the Discovery Channel out on the African savanna, and they've just found some corpse of a dead animal, and they're chewing and gnawing this thing to bits and pieces. And it's a big pack of hyenas, and there's a bunch of them, and they're all fighting with each other, trying to get the best parts, ripping pieces of meat off the bone and then ripping it out of each other's mouths and clawing at each other and fighting for status. Who's going to be the top hyena? So that's one scenario. And now imagine the other scenario of a manta ray, this giant blue majestic manta ray gently flapping its wings and gliding through the Pacific Ocean deep in the waters. Very cool and nonchalant. Cool as a cucumber. So here's the question for you. Which do you want to be for the rest of your life? Do you want to be a hyena or do you want to be a manta ray? The choice is yours. The hyenas, they're the critics. This is all the people you see on TV, in the books, in the magazines, in the news, on YouTube. These people who criticize other people, who criticize other people for criticizing other people, and criticize other people for criticizing other people for criticizing other people. It doesn't stop. The hyena's nature is that it criticizes. No matter what, it'll find a way to criticize anything. The manta ray, he's above all that. He doesn't care. The manta ray has gone meta. I don't know about you, but recently I've had a shift where I've decided that I don't want to be a hyena anymore. I want to be a manta ray. That's how I want to live. And so for that to happen, some changes will be happening. And if you want to be a manta ray, I'll show you how to do that in a minute. But before we get there, one quick other point that I want to make about this metaphor is that notice that the manta ray doesn't demonize the hyenas. The manta ray doesn't think the hyenas are bad. The manta ray doesn't go around criticizing the hyenas behind their back. The manta ray is cool as a cucumber no matter what. He doesn't care what the hyenas do. He keeps being a manta ray. That's what it means to be a manta ray. The hyenas are all in it together, and they're all doing and copying each other. The manta ray is off on his own. So, what this means for our topic is that if you want to be a manta ray, that means you have to give up criticizing hyenas. You can't be a manta ray while criticizing hyenas. That makes you a hyena, not a manta ray. Make sure you don't forget that. That's a tricky little thing. So, if you want to become a manta ray, how to do it? Well, I'll give you 6 questions for helping you to reframe all criticism. So whenever you get into a situation where you are starting to act like a hyena and you're noticing it, here are some questions you can ask yourself to flip it around. Number 1, how is this situation a red herring? Number 2, what am I failing to accept here about reality? Number 3, is this productive? Is my being a hyena productive? Number 4, how can I be more constructive with my energy and time? Number 5, is this making me feel happy being a hyena? And number 6, what positive lesson can I learn from this thing which I am tempted to criticize? So for example, if you are tempted to criticize Trump or a terrorist or a Nazi or some hyena or somebody else, you ask yourself, what can I learn from those hyenas? See, that's what the manta ray does. He doesn't criticize them, he learns from them. He says, those hyenas, I might not like particularly what they're doing, but I'll learn a positive lesson from that rather than just sit on my ass and criticize them. So those are some handy questions. And lastly, what I suggest to really make this embodied and actualized in your life is that you take on my 30-day no criticism challenge, which I will be doing myself starting today. And the way you do that is you take a rubber band or a wristband like this, you put it around your wrist, and you make a commitment to not be critical of anyone over the next 30 days and to be mindful of that. And anytime that you catch yourself, because you will catch yourself, if you have this wristband, it'll help you to catch yourself just getting into the mode of being a hyena. And then you recognize, wait a minute. I want to be a manta ray, not a hyena. And maybe you ask some of these questions of yourself, like, is being a hyena actually going to make me happy? Is it going to be productive? Is it going to be a red herring from turning inwards and doing consciousness work? And then you drop it. You drop your criticism. And you keep that up for 30 days straight. Keep this wristband on your wrist the whole time. Don't take it off. Every time your eye catches it, you remind yourself what this whole challenge is about. You remind yourself of this image of the hyena versus the manta ray. And you just ask yourself, which one do I want to be? And then you visualize yourself being a manta ray. And you visualize yourself for the rest of your life living that way versus living as a hyena. And then you use that to inspire you, and you pay attention to how you start to feel and how much better you start to feel over these 30 days. And that's it. So you will see me wearing this wristband for a while now, for about a month, and maybe I'll give you an update in the future about how that goes for me. So I'm doing it. I encourage you to do it as well. Just as one final warning, the one trap you have to avoid here is that you want to make sure you don't turn everything I'm saying here as a weapon against other people. So if you see other people criticizing other people, for example, maybe you're on the forum and you see two people in an argument with each other, criticizing each other back and forth over some issue. And then you're really tempted to jump in there and say, oh, guys, but Leo said no more criticizing. Stop criticizing. You're being bad for criticizing. And notice what just happened. You turned into a hyena. You got tricked by the situation. So be very careful about that. Turn inwards. Always turn inwards. Don't use any of these ideas against other people. Use it against your own ego. And that's the end here. All right. Please make sure you click that like button for me. Come check out actualize.org. Take a look at my blog. I'm posting a lot of new stuff there. Check out the forum. We have lively discussions there. Also, the forum will really test your hyena or manta ray nature. Check out my life purpose course. Check out the book list. A lot of important books for you to start reading there. And lastly, just stick with me for more content. In the future, I will be returning to more practical topics. It might sound like lately I've been going very abstract and deep and metaphysical, and that's going to be the future of actualize.org. No, that's not the case. There will still be very many practical topics. I want to shoot practical topics about how to shop for healthy food, how to do all sorts of stuff like this, which is just very practical. But what you're going to see is that actually when I return to these more practical topics, all the abstract and metaphysical stuff that I talked about previously, you'll see how it's actually deepened my ability to understand and to talk about the practical stuff. And that's the connection that I want you to be making. The practical and the theoretical or the abstract, these are not separate things. These all inform each other. And to really have a profound understanding of the practical topics, it helps to have the existential stuff really nailed and understood. Because when you're doing practical stuff, but you don't have the existential stuff nailed, all the practical stuff is mostly going to be a waste of your time. You're going to be running around doing a bunch of stuff. You're going to be busy, but your busyness is not going to be grounded in anything truthful. You want to ground your practicality in truth, in the actually most important things in life, the higher consciousness stuff, which is why I love to sort of oscillate back and forth covering topics between the existential and metaphysical versus the practical. And we'll be doing more of that in the future. And you will see that when I talk about practical stuff in the future, I will get to like the really core, the essence of it. My ability to talk about the practical stuff will have skyrocketed. I can feel that in me. It's just that I haven't really been actualizing it in terms of talking about it on episodes. But over the last year, I've been doing so much existential work on myself. But also, I can see that, man, there's so much practical stuff that all of this will ultimately fuel. So what I'm really doing is I'm investing into the existential to build my foundation so that when I talk about practical stuff in the future, it's going to be like both practical, but also like deeply, deeply significant. You want to have both. And that's what you're going to see from me going forward. So make sure you stick around for that.